Hello, Iris listeners. Welcome to Hour 3 of The Register. I'm Dale Finnegan, your reader today, and I will be starting with the 2 pages of obituaries from The Register. From Ankeny, Mary Joan Reed, known as Jo, age 81, died on Friday, November 20th. She had recently been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, but thankfully was able to spend the last few months living with her daughter, receiving hospice care at home. She passed away peacefully, surrounded by her family. Jo is survived by her dear sister, Jeannie Marley of Overland Park, Kansas, her children, Kelly Castle, husband Mike of Ankeny, Randy Reed, wife Sarah of Des Moines, Kristen Harrigan, husband Ron Logan of Mesa, Arizona, and 8 grandchildren. Jo grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, attending Southeast High School and Pershing Grade School. She met the love of her life, Jerry, at the University of Missouri, and they married in 1961. They celebrated 56 years of marriage before Jerry passed away in 2018. Jo and Jerry lived in many places over the course of their lives. Jo had a dance studio in Kosciusko, Missouri, for many years, and she continued to teach dancing as they moved to other cities. They landed in Ankeny in 1984 and never left. Jo was an active member of Ankeny Community Theater for over 30 years. She attended Ankeny First United Methodist Church, where she and Jerry were both in the choir. After they retired, they became world travelers, enjoying many cruises and tropical trips each year. Jo and Jerry loved to visit Branson, Missouri, making several trips annually. George Dyer was a favorite, and almost all Christmas presents were purchased in Branson. They never missed an opportunity to see Neil Diamond and Il Divo in concert, sometimes seeing them in multiple cities during a concert tour. Please feel free to share your memories and condolences with Jo's family personally through email or social media. We want everyone to remain safe and healthy, and for those reasons, we will not be holding a visitation. The funeral service will be held on Monday, November 30th at 1 p.m. It will be held graveside at Ankeny Memorial Gardens, 4208 North Ankeny Boulevard in Ankeny, Iowa, 50023. All are welcome, but those wishing to attend will be asked to wear a mask and remain physically distanced. In lieu of flowers, please consider donating to Wesley Life Hospice or to the Chancel Choir at Ankeny First United Methodist Church in Jo's honor. Arrangements are being made through Hamilton's near Highland Memory Gardens. Online condolences may be expressed at www.hamiltonfuneralhome.com. Mary Ione Cook of Newton died November 20th. She was born June 9th, 1925, to Myrna Mabey and Edwin McGregor on family homestead land outside of Salem, North Dakota. She married Arnold Eugene Cook of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, on December 26, 1947. He preceded her in death. Mary is survived by her children, Marnie Llewellyn, spouse Don, Janet Cook of Austin, Texas, Carolyn Barr Cook of Newton, Iowa, and Matthew Cook, spouse Niels Nielsen of Seattle, Washington, as well as grandchildren, Bonnie Llewellyn of San Jose, California, Lauren Ross Llewellyn of Austin, Texas, and Alan Cook Barr of St. Paul, Minnesota. A complete obituary is available at Pence Reese Funeral Home's website. Clark Albert Lane Jr., age 83, of Humboldt, passed away on Tuesday, November 17th at the Humboldt South Care Center. Clark is survived by his 3 children, Deborah, Lou, spouse Dr. James, C.A. Lane, spouse Tracy, and Bill Lane. 4 grandchildren, Sarah Lou, Megan Lou, Ryan Lane, and Emma Lane. He is also survived by sister-in-law Kay Glessner, niece Ann Glessner, niece Holly Glessner, and her husband Rich Kenyon. A memorial service will be planned for the summer of 2021. Interment will be in Union Cemetery in Humboldt. The Mason Lindhart Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Family Fund at New Hope Village, P.O. Box 887, Carroll, Iowa, 51401-0887. Camp Courageous, P.O. Box 418, Monticello, Iowa, 52310, or the Congregational United Church of Christ, 111 North Taft Street in Humboldt, Iowa, 50548. Robert Eugene Connors, age 86, entered his heavenly home Monday, November 16th. Robert was born August 7th, 1934, to John Jay and Edna Connors. He was an employee of Colonial Bread Company and Wonder Bread Company on dedicated sales routes. He studied religion and became pastor at Union Park Grace Fellowship Church in Des Moines. He touched many souls with his deep faith and teachings, as well as his beautiful singing voice. He loved church gatherings and gospel assemblies. He and his wife, Carol, traveled frequently spreading the message through song. Pastor Bob is survived by his first wife, Phyllis J. Royland, and their children, Steve Connors and Rhonda Knight, spouse Stephen. Stepsons, Randall, William, and Ben Langford, four grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, and a wealth of friends and family. He was preceded in death by his wife of 52 years, Carol, his brothers Paul and John, sisters Edna and Virginia, and stepson Donald. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 27th at Hamilton's Funeral Home, 605 Lyon Street in Des Moines. Funeral service will begin at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 28th at Union Park Grace Fellowship Church, 832 Grandview Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50316. Burial will take place at Highland Memory Garden Cemetery after the service. Memorial contributions may be directed to the family in loving memory of Pastor Bob. Condolences may be expressed at www.hamiltonsfuneralhome.com. Martha Corsby, age 79, of Urbandale, died peacefully on November 21st in Des Moines, with her son and daughter by her side. Martha was born in Des Moines to Virgil and Annabelle Lecken. She was a graduate from Roosevelt High School. She worked for Sears Roebuck & Company for over 40 years before retiring from their corporate office in West Des Moines in 2003. Martha enjoyed spending time working in her yard and especially planting her flowers in the spring. She also enjoyed working on various house projects, and when one was finished, she couldn't wait to get started on another. She always put her family first and always needed to know that everyone was doing fine. Martha is survived and will be greatly missed by her son, Christopher, spouse Dana, daughter Teresa, grandchildren Zachary, spouse Samantha, Alyssa, spouse Steve, and Connor, great-grandchildren Daniel, Emery, Bianca, Mila, and Aiden, a brother, James, spouse Kate, and a niece, Jeannie, spouse Ben. She was preceded in death by her parents and a nephew, Tim. In lieu of flowers, donations may be sent to Mercy One Johnston Hospice Care or the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition, the NOCC, of Des Moines. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, there will be a service for immediate family held on Saturday, November 28th at the Isles Westover Chapel, with a graveside service immediately following at McDivitt Grove Cemetery in Urbandale. Online condolences are welcome at www.islescares.com. Marjorie Ann, maiden name Alt, Scepter Hargens, went home to heaven on Monday, November 23rd. She died at the age of 96 years, 4 months, and 13 days of natural causes, under the care of Wesley Life Hospice and Steve, Jenna, and Marilyn at Stephen Marilyn's home. Due to the unprecedented risk of COVID-19 at this time, there will be a private family burial with appropriate safety measures. Please visit Marjorie's page at www.mclarensresthavenchapel.com. And at the bottom of the obituary, click on View Live Stream to view her service. A celebration of her life will be held in 2021 when it is safe to gather and do so. Memorials can be directed to the family for future designation, West Des Moines Christian Church, or Wesley Life, who blessed us beyond words. Maxine B. Murray, age 85, of Des Moines, passed away peacefully on November 22nd. A funeral mass will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, November 30th at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Interment at Glendale Cemetery will follow. Maxine was born on September 26, 1935, on the Albert Jensen Farm in rural Fontenelle to Max and Alma Coleman Smith. She graduated from East High School. On May 8, 1954, she was united in marriage to Michael P. Murray of Des Moines. They made their home on the east side of Des Moines, where they raised their seven children, Deborah, Tim, Mark, Joseph, Brian, Steve, and Joan. She was most proud of her Catholic faith and her family. Her passion was her family, giving gifts, and serving her church, where she was affectionately known as the General. Together, Michael and Maxine owned and operated Murray Motors Incorporated. Maxine is survived and lovingly remembered by her children, Deborah Murray, Tim Murray, spouse Tina, Mark Murray, spouse Jean, Steve Murray, and Joan Murray. 17 grandchildren, 26 great-grandchildren, two brothers, Ernie Smith, spouse Darlene, and Ronald Smith, spouse Kim, sister-in-law, Marie Smith, and numerous nieces, nephews, and their families. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Michael P. Murray, two sons, Joseph and Brian Murray, three brothers, Charles, Max, and James, and a brother and sister-in-law, Denny and Nona Murray. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to St. Joseph Catholic Church. For those unable to attend the funeral, it will be live-streamed. A link will appear on Maxine's obituary page at 10:45 a.m. Monday, just prior to the service, at www.islescares.com, where you may also leave online condolences. Mary Alice Snow Mash Smith of Dallas Center. Mary was born on November 7, 1921, to Daniel Freeman and Hazel Gross Snow of Dallas Center. Mary had a younger brother, Robert Snow, who she looked after when her parents divorced when she was seven. Her father, Mary, and her little brother lived in the Dallas Center area. Years later, her mother remarried, and Mary had a stepsister, Frances, and a stepbrother, Leroy. When Mary was 16, she married James Mash, who was from a family of 12 children, so they also always had family around. The young couple worked together around Dallas Center and Perry areas. In 1940, their daughter Shirley was born. After Jim gave up farming, he opened his own farm repair shop in Dallas Center. They moved to a small home in town where she still was living when she passed away Monday, November 23rd, at the age of 99 years and 2 weeks. In 1963, her husband was told he had Lou Gehrig's disease, also known as ALS. He lived 5 years, and Mary took care of him. He lost the use of his whole body except his big toe, and he used that to communicate with his family using Morse code. Even his young grandchildren learned to communicate with him using a poster on the wall for help. After Jim passed away, Mary found a job at Dolls in Clive, but it wasn't long she realized helping others was her passion after taking care of her late husband. She became a medical machine tech at the VA hospital in Des Moines. After 6 years, she found a job closer to home, and she became the night supervisor at the Dallas County Care Facility, and later a med aide at Spurgeon Manor in Dallas Center. In 1969, she married Don Smith. Don had three children, Dan, Donna, and Rick, as well as three grandchildren, Tom, Becky, and Kathy Grief. Don and Mary opened a cafe and gas station on the west end of Dallas Center, which they operated for several years. When Don's health started to slide, Mary stayed home to take care of her two great-granddaughters, Beth and Shelley Grief. During the next 4 years, Don and Mary babysat not only the two great-granddaughters, but two neighbor boys. They loved them, spoiled them, took them frog hunting, fishing, showed them love, and more love. Later, they even watched two other great-grandchildren. After Don's passing, she went to work at Pioneer in the germination lab. She worked there with her girls until she was in her 80s. Mary is survived by her daughter Shirley Grief, spouse Jerry of Dallas Center, three stepchildren, Dan Smith, Donna Hansen, and Rick Smith, as well as 30 grandchildren. Private family graveside services will be held on Saturday, November 28th at 11 a.m. at the Brethren Cemetery in Dallas Center. Please visit Mary's obituary page at www.islescares.com at 12:45 a.m., where the services will be live streamed. Patricia L. McCormick of Johnston, age 93, died Monday, November 23rd at Bishop Drum Care Center in Johnston. Patty Londo arrived to a French father, Larry, and an Australian mother, Rose, on October 9, 1927. From an early childhood in Minneapolis, Minnesota, she and her parents followed Larry's auditing engagements in different cities out west. Her fondest memories derived from Pocatello, Idaho. Depression times were tough, but the little family benefited through meeting different people and experiencing new parts of the country. Eventually, they resettled in Minneapolis, where Patty attended Holy Angels High School. She took the trolley back and forth, graduating at the tender age of 16. St. Catherine's College in St. Paul provided her undergraduate studies. By then, her interest had swung to dietetics. She transferred to the University of Iowa, completing her master's in nutrition while meeting the love of her life in the kitchen. Jean McCormick was an aspiring dental student who moonlighted as a busboy in the kitchen cafeteria. Technically, Patty was her boss. Very soon, she hitched her star to his wagon. Jean always kidded her about reversing that phrase. And they moved to Des Moines in 1951. Initially, Patty worked in Jean's first dental office as his receptionist. She was soon replaced when the children began to arrive. Their family eventually held three sons and two daughters. Patty and Jean generously extended an open-door policy at their Urbandale homestead. Visiting relatives, friends, clergy, and furry four-legged characters enjoyed their hospitality. Spirited pitch games were played at the kitchen table, which included late-night spreads of cold cuts and condiments, music in the background. Patty's nutritional background served her children well, but came into sharper focus when Jean developed type 1 diabetes. In the 1960s, treatment for this diagnosis involved more complications than today, affecting a patient's eyesight and fine motor capabilities. With her encouragement and oversight of menu and food choices, he was able to practice dentistry into his mid-60s. She eventually returned to his reception desk before he retired. As her children found their wings, Patty participated in several organizations. She and Jean became charter members of St. Pius X Catholic Church in 1954, Mercy Hospital Guild, St. Pius Altar and Rosary Society, Catholic Charities, Bishop Drum Guild, Catholic Women's League, and Patient Advocate at Bishop Drum Complex in Johnston. Mass was an important part of each day, lecturing at St. Pius and Macaulay Terrace. She had a gift for writing folks, never forgetting a birthday, anniversary, or special event in someone's life. The card held a personal written message and arrived in the mailbox on time. Belated was not in her vocabulary. Patty's generous support to the church, multiple friends, and family will not soon be forgotten. Jean's mother commented several times that Patty had a remarkable adaptive personality. She left her nuclear family and flourished in another state, eventually making Iowa her home. While she was only an only child, she adapted to raising a large family with an acreage and pets and all the responsibility that such crowd entails. While she did not have pets as a child, Jean grew up on a farm and loved his dogs. A dog presented no problem when they moved to their acreage. Urbandale developed around them. A roaming pet couldn't be above the law. When the policeman brought Kelly, their fox terrier, home for a third time and mentioned that repeated offenses meant jail time, Patty threw up her hands and pleaded, "I'll take the 3 days in jail. It would be easier than chasing Kelly around." She and Jean enjoyed 54 years together, a fruitful marriage with an engaging and enlarging circle of spouses and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. When the house emptied out and Jean passed on, Patty adapted again. She moved to Macaulay Terrace in Johnston, enjoying a new social sphere of friends and activities. When her energy slowed to viewing the world through a window, watching the birds at her feeder, she adapted for the last time, passing from this world to the next on November 23rd. Left to remember her as the one who guided the family are her children, Michael, spouse Dieter of Carlisle, James, spouse Patrice of Granger, Rosemary Anglin, spouse Jim of Orlando, Florida, Maureen Sorensen, spouse John of Crestwood, Kentucky, and Jose Garcia, spouse Linda of Urbandale. Patty, an only child, counted 15 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren at the time of her passing. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 28th at St. Pius X Catholic Church, where the family will receive friends 1 hour prior to the service. Due to social gathering limitations, Patricia's service will be live streamed. Please visit Patricia's obituary page on our website, www.islescares.com, for a link 10 minutes prior to the service. Due to social gathering limitations, Patricia's service will be live streamed. Please visit Patricia's obituary page on our website, www.islescares.com, for a link 10 minutes prior to the service. We encourage friends and extended family to share their sympathies with Patricia's family using online condolences available on our website. That concludes the obituaries for today. I'll turn now to the sports section of the Register. The article featured in the middle of the page there is titled, Five-Star Beaulieu Right at Home with Waukee. The subtitle says, Senior Transfer Fitting In with Star-Studded Warriors. And I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that last name. It's spelled B-I-L-I-E-W. The dateline is Waukee, and this is written by Matthew Bain. During one sequence of Waukee's basketball practice, November 17th, a four-star 2021 prospect drained a three-pointer. That prospect then passed to a fellow top 150 2021 talent. The ball eventually found its way to a four-star 2023 prospect for a corner three-point attempt. On the other end of the floor, a five-star 2023 prospect got an easy layup. With Drake signee Tucker DeVries, Iowa signee Peyton Sanford, Price Sanford, and Omaha Beaulieu all on the same Waukee team. That's what practices and games this winter are going to look like. And that's the biggest reason that Beaulieu chose to play for the Warriors. After flirting with the notion of playing for prep powerhouse Hillcrest Prep in Arizona over the offseason, Beaulieu, a 6'8" combo forward who is a top 5 national prospect with the likes of Kentucky's John Calipari recruiting him, decided to transfer from Dowling Catholic to Waukee last July. I feel like myself at Waukee, Beaulieu told the Register. I love playing around these types of players because I get challenged all the time. If I want to be an elite player and go to the next level, I've got to surround myself with other great players that can challenge me. I'm getting held accountable. Beaulieu averaged 6.2 points and 3.6 points per game last year for a 16-8 Maroons team that came one win short of the state tournament. He started 11 of Dowling's 24 games and was usually a secondary option on a team filled with seniors. He currently holds offers from Iowa, Arkansas, Georgia, Illinois, Nebraska, Michigan, and Western Kentucky, and Kentucky is among the many other schools showing interest. A lot of stuff played into it, personally, Beaulieu told the Register of his transfer. But I felt more at home, and I just feel like I'm more comfortable playing basketball here. And I'm having fun here, and that's all there is to it. If I have fun with basketball, then I'm going to love it, and I'm going to play to the best of my abilities. Waukee went 23-3 last year and lost to Ankeny in the Class 4A title game. You just feel the love out here, Beaulieu said. Waukee has a lot of love for the basketball program, and I'm just glad for that. I love these types of environments. Alongside that article are Randy Peterson and Chad Leistikow's columns. I'll start with Randy Peterson's. The title there is Iowa State surges atop Big 12 power rankings. You're thinking that Breece Hall is Iowa State's offensive most valuable player. You're sure Mike Rose is the defensive MVP, that Kini Nwangwu is the Cyclones' 2020 top special teams performer, and that it's a tie between Chase Allen and Charlie Kolar as the team's most quotable player. You're right, but let's not forget another segment of the locker room. After running through the list of players with impressive statistics during what could be a historic season, there are others just as dedicated and just as mindful of everything that's going on outside the doors of the football complex. Fans got a glimpse of them in the fourth quarter of last Saturday's 45-0 victory against Kansas State at Jack Trice Stadium. The true freshmen who polished off the 15th-ranked Cyclones' sixth conference win and have helped enable the Big 12's first-place team. 8 of 23 or so true freshmen on the team played. Some of the 8, such as backup quarterback Hunter Deckers, have played in multiple games. Others haven't played, yet thankfully for the program, they've been just as committed. Where will they be during Friday's 11 a.m. game at number 21 Texas? Most will be back in Ames, probably watching the game, and hopefully continuing to practice the same coronavirus mitigation as the players they someday hope to replace. What brought this to mind was when Kansas State coach Chris Kleiman said his program's most recent COVID-19 outbreak included players who rarely played. COVID hit our young kids, he said before the game in Ames. We're down a good chunk of our freshman class. One virus-catching player can infect an entire program. One weak moment when partying is chosen over protocol is all it takes. One misstep during the 36 hours or so a team is on the road can shut down a program. That's why it's admirable what Matt Campbell's group has done. With their cumulative focus, what Friday's game means might never have happened. They've been exceptional, Campbell said Tuesday. They certainly came in here under very different circumstances. For every one of our true freshmen, this has been a really challenging experience. It's a challenge anyway for true freshmen, but to go through it the way they're going through it is certainly unique. It's a credit to our culture that the senior leadership and the upperclassmen have provided. It's almost been a seamless transition. The growth and development, the standards of the way we play, have been continued by a lot of young and talented players. That's exciting for all of us. Players who don't travel essentially are on their own. And not only at Iowa State, but everywhere on game days. It's their first experience away from home for many. It's their first time on a college campus, and we know all the trappings that can go with that. It's so different from when I was a freshman, redshirt senior tight end Chase Allen said. I can't imagine being in their shoes. They've made such a huge commitment. It's one of those things that, ever since they've been here, that's the way it's been. I don't think they know any better, really. They've been super strict. They've given everything to the team. It's the reason we're having the kind of season that we are. They deserve a lot of credit. Allen's freshman year wasn't exactly what you'd call normal, either. He was struck by a car. He had to have shards of glass plucked from his back. But he didn't have to be wary of spreading the virus. We all have our fun when we're freshmen, he said. Putting that aside, there is a risk that really never was there before. Freshmen are putting that on their shoulders. I'm really proud of them. But as someone cautioned me Tuesday morning, it's not time for a celebratory end zone ball spiking just yet. Peterson ends the article with the Register's list of Big 12 power rankings, where, of course, as he mentioned, Iowa is number one, and they are 6-2 overall and 6-1 in the Big 12 and number 15 in the U.S. Number two, they have Oklahoma. At number three, Texas. At number four, Oklahoma State. In fifth place, West Virginia, followed in sixth place by Kansas State. Number seven is TCU. Number eight, Texas Tech. Number nine, Baylor, and in the 10th spot of his rankings is Kansas. I'll turn now to Chad Leistikow's column. The title there, Iowa preps for two QBs again in short week. For the second consecutive week, Iowa's defense is preparing for a football game and doesn't yet know who its opponent will be starting at quarterback. Of course, it worked out pretty well the first time. The Hawkeyes' extra prep work for Penn State quarterbacks Will Levis and Sean Clifford paid off last week. They put a physical beating on Levis, or Levis, I'm sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, forcing two lost fumbles. He was replaced by Clifford, who Iowa intercepted twice in the fourth quarter to seal a 41-21 win. Now the Hawkeyes, on a short week, don't know whether they'll be facing Adrian Martinez or Luke McCaffrey in Friday's noon game against Nebraska at Kinnick Stadium. On Monday, Nebraska coach Scott Frost said that both quarterbacks would compete during practice. There's no doubt in my mind Luke McCaffrey's the future around here. But right now, to help us win, we've got to play the guy that gives us the best chance, Frost said. I think Adrian's been playing with a little chip on his shoulder. Reading the tea leaves of that comment, it would seem that Martinez, who has started against Iowa in each of the past two seasons, might get the nod, especially after McCaffrey was careless with the football in a 41-23 loss at Illinois. The Hawkeyes have 10 interceptions through five games and 63 as a program, the most in FBS, since 2017. Who do Iowa players expect to see Friday? We don't really know who's coming out, but we're preparing to play a quarterback who likes to run, Iowa defensive tackle Davion Nixon said Tuesday. Regardless of who gets in the game, we've got a game plan for either of them. Martinez was especially impressive in the 2018 game at Kinnick Stadium, but the Hawkeyes did a better job containing him in 2019 at Memorial Stadium. McCaffrey actually came in to throw one pass in that game, and it went for a 39-yard touchdown. Both games that Martinez started went down to the wire, with Iowa winning on the last second field goals. Whoever gets the first nod Friday, Iowa knows it will be facing a running threat. In 24 career games, Martinez has 1,450 career rushing yards and 4,846 passing yards. McCaffrey rushed 26 times for 122 yards and two touchdowns against Illinois. Yes, that's the younger brother of Christian McCaffrey, who tormented Iowa while playing for Stanford in the 2016 Rose Bowl. If we're comparing this to Penn State, Martinez is more on par with Clifford, can make plays with his legs, but is more effective through the air. McCaffrey is more like Levis or Levis, a definite running threat, but not as likely to beat you with his arm. The guy at Penn State last week, Levis, was mobile, but these guys were pretty fast, Iowa linebacker Nick Nyman said. Durable runners, both of them. I think they're pretty similar in senses. I'll probably just leave it at that. Nixon was wearing a big smile as usual on Tuesday after a weekend of his 671-yard interception return touchdown made national highlights. The 305-pound junior has been tremendous all season, but entered cult hero status with his Eurostep move and ability to escape a Penn State running back on his way to the end zone Saturday in Happy Valley. After the game, Big Ten Network's Rick Pizzo asked Nixon if he could use those moves against All-American basketball player Luke Garza on the court. On Tuesday, Nixon joked that his strategy against Garza would be to use his strength to overcome the 8-inch height disadvantage. I would have to keep the ball in the paint as much as possible, Nixon said, and see what I could do there. With such a short season and Nixon likely shooting up NFL draft boards, odds are we probably won't see much of him, much more of him at Iowa. But he wanted his fans to know that he has heard from many of you, and he appreciates the love he's getting. My phone has yet to stop buzzing on Twitter and Instagram, Nixon said. I've gotten so many new followers. People will just tell me they're huge fans of mine and love how I play and love how I carry myself. I'm just happy that I'm making more people than I ever know proud of what I'm doing and what I'm becoming as a person and a football player. It took Nixon a while to get acclimated to the Iowa program. Originally a commitment in the 2017 class, Nixon had to go to Iowa Western Community College to get his academics in order. Then he got an offer from Alabama, but he stuck with Iowa, redshirted, and now is flourishing. It's a great story that continues to build. Iowa players were happy for teammate Keith Duncan in 2019 when he set a Big Ten record for field goals with 29. But they weren't happy to see him on the field that much. That was a prime off-season message, that the Hawkeyes wanted more 7-point possessions than 3-pointers. Iowa had 36 touchdowns and 29 field goals last season. So far in 2020, the totals are 21 touchdowns and 6 field goals. I love Keith Duncan to death, but when he's leading the nation in red zone field goals, that means we're not finishing in the red zone, center Tyler Linderbaum said. The less kick attempts he has, the better, added left tackle Alaric Jackson. Nothing against Keith Duncan. He's a great player, but I want to see him on the sidelines. Beyond mentality, another difference is Iowa has two outstanding running backs in Tyler Goodson and Mickey Sargent. When Nate Stanley was manning the quarterback controls in his first 2 years, he could lean on eventual first-round NFL draft tight ends in Noah Fant and TJ Hockenson. They were arguably Iowa's best offensive players. But he lost them in 2019, and Iowa struggled to hit pay dirt. Now the running backs are clicking behind that offensive line. Goodson and Sargent, 6 rushing touchdowns each, tied for second in the Big Ten. They are among Iowa's best offensive players. The Iowa running backs room is as good as it's been in a long, long time. Sorry AJ Espinosa isn't back with the Hawkeyes. But there's a new exciting prospect wearing the number 94 made famous by former pass rushers such as Espinosa and Jared DeVries. It's Yaya Black, an 18-year-old from Western Minnesota who already measures 6'5", 279 pounds. He played 13 snaps against the Nittany Lions for his first meaningful Hawkeye action. With John Wagoner out another week, Black might see the field on a limited basis against Nebraska. Young Yaya, teammate Chauncey Golston said, smiling. He's a big guy, first of all. He comes ready to work every day. He has good energy. We love it in the room. That's a good building block for years to come. Kirk Ferentz rarely heaps praise on young players, so it was notable that he said Tuesday that Black, quote, came to one of our camps 2 years ago, and he was one of the most impressive campers we've ever had come through there in a couple of decades. He's a very aggressive prospect. I think he's got a really good future. Ferentz, though, said Black is not ready for primetime yet, and joked about how he lined up a full yard behind the line of scrimmage in one of his first snaps against Penn State. He was being way too respectful of their left tackle, Ferentz said. It was almost as if he was asking for permission to step across the line of scrimmage. But that's what young players do. He's not like that in practice, I can assure you. Although freshman development has been especially shortchanged during this COVID-19 year, it was notable that Ferentz also said this Tuesday, quote, I feel really good about our freshman class in its entirety. Regarding Jack Plum, who also got his first meaningful action on Saturday, the sophomore from Green Bay got 24 snaps after starting right tackle Mark Kallenberger exited with an injury. For what it's worth, Pro Football Focus listed Plum, 6'7" and 293 pounds, as having the second best grade of the 6 offensive linemen who played and helped Iowa score 41 points. Any bit of playing time is really valuable for guys who haven't played a lot, Ferentz said. If Mark can't go, then Jack would be the guy for sure. It doesn't sound promising that Coy Kronk, who began the season as Iowa's right tackle, returns this week from injury. However, guard Kyler Schott is back after missing 3 games with mononucleosis. Schott won't start Friday, but Ferentz said he would play. Those were a couple of long sports articles, but hopefully we can get through the stories in the date book or life section of the Register today. The article at the front of the page is titled, Things to Do When the Temps Are Chilly, fun and safe indoor family activities in the Des Moines area, and this is written from staff reports. With temperatures falling and autumn in full force, what can families do to get out of the house safely and warmly while the pandemic is still a very real threat? Fortunately, the metro area offers a multitude of venues and activities that provide a day or night out with the family while keeping COVID-19 precautions a top priority. You can catch a flick. The Palms Theater at 200 Northeast Eastgate Drive in Waukee is showing favorite classic and family-friendly movies, or you can call ahead and take advantage of their curbside pickup of movie popcorn and treats and take in a movie in your living room. Tuesdays, the Palms offers bargain prices. You can see what's playing at their website. Century 21 Jordan Creek and XD at 101 Jordan Creek Parkway in West Des Moines is currently showing a few new movies as well as tried and true favorites, especially for the holidays. To keep patrons safe, the theater is requiring face masks except when eating or drinking in the auditoriums. Check out their website to find out what other precautions the theater has taken to ensure maximum cleanliness and safety. You can earn perks by becoming a Cinemark Movie fan for free or joining the Cinemark Movie Club. You can learn more at their website, cinemark.com/theaters. At Ankeny 12 B&B Theaters, which is located at 1580 Southwest Market Street in Ankeny, look for kids' movies and family-friendly holiday favorites coming soon at the Ankeny location. Kids can also take advantage of the Outtakes Arcade to play games and win some prizes. You can visit their website to see what's showing. You can also play around. The Des Moines Children's Museum is back at Valley West Mall. The museum offers a large venue to socially distance while playing and exploring. Anyone age 2 or over is asked to wear a mask. Current hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. Ages 1 to 10 is $6 or $2 for families with EBT or WIC cards. A family yearly membership is $125, and you can learn more at the website dsmchildrensmuseums.com. You can also let the kids run off some steam at the Playground for Kids, located at 2401 Southeast Tones Drive, Suite 7 in Ankeny. It's a 9,000 square foot indoor playground facility with inflatables, an enormous treehouse play structure, and other fun activities. Beginning November 2nd, they will offer extended hours, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday and 9 a.m. to noon Saturday. You can follow their Facebook page to see upcoming specials and events. Although there is a 21 and over area at Smash Park, which is located at 6625 Coach Light Drive in West Des Moines, kids and families are welcome in all the other areas of the huge food and fun entertainment center. Owners just invested in an upgraded air ventilation system to better ensure the health of their patrons, along with added outdoor heaters so that the yard can stay open longer with its outdoor games. You can follow Smash Park's Facebook page for updates and specials. You can throw a strike at Air Lanes, which is located at 4200 Fleur Drive. They are offering affordable family fun with open lanes at various times throughout the week and weekend. You purchase a family pack and get 2 hours of bowling, shoes, and a bag of popcorn for up to 6 people for $59.95. Call 285-8632 to find out open bowling times. You can enjoy comfy couches, neon lights, huge TV screens, and bowling balls that look like pool balls at B-Roll Bowling, which is located with Ankeny 12 B&B Theaters at 1580 Southwest Market Street. Rent a lane for $25 an hour or up to six guests. You can reserve a lane online and get a preview of the unique bowling experience at the website, bbtheaters.com. Bowl Under the Ocean at Uncle Buck's Fish Bowl and Grill. This is located at 1000 Bass Pro Drive in Altoona. With custom bowling balls that include the likenesses of octopuses, mermaids, and more, along with under-the-sea decor. During COVID-19, apply for the Kids Bowl Free program at their website, which is good for 60 minutes for up to 4 guests per lane. You can learn a thing or two. With the reopening of the Des Moines Art Center at 4700 Grand Avenue, you can enjoy a free outing learning about art and culture. Reserve a timed ticket for up to 30 days in advance to ensure social distancing, and make sure to bring a mask. Instead of wandering through the galleries on your own, you'll find a path to follow throughout the collections. The shop is also open for socially distanced shopping, with restrictions to the number of visitors at one time. You can learn more and schedule your visit at DesMoinesArtCenter.org. The Science Center of Iowa, located at 401 West Martin Luther King Drive, Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway, is currently open Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and requires face masks for ages 2 and older. You'll want to go before January 10th to see Sue, the T-Rex Experience, along with other activities and exhibitions at the Science Center. Kids and adults alike will enjoy the hands-on experiences that include nearly all branches of science, engineering, and technology. Visit sciowa.org to purchase tickets in advance. And finally, the animals are still out at Blank Park Zoo, located at 7401 Southwest 9th Street. So bundle up and pay them a visit. Masks are required upon entry. The zoo is open daily from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's encouraged to purchase an anytime ticket before you go at blankparkzoo.com. Visit the website or their Facebook page to learn about the animals you'll see and find out about any special upcoming events. At the bottom of the date book, we have an article from Sarah Jordan Heinz of the Ames Tribune. The title is Sweet Smell of Success at Nevada's Bricktown Bakery. Nevada's Bricktown Bakery sold 2,700 donuts the first Saturday it was open. Co-owner Paula Feltner has been thrilled with the outpouring of support her new business has seen. "We're basically a 24-hour operation at this point," she said. "We're making donuts all afternoon. They're fried all night, and things are baked all afternoon. It's a never-ending cycle until Saturday, when we rest. Then Monday afternoon, when it all starts up again." Bricktown Bakery is located at 1105 6th Street, Suite 102, adjacent to Feltner and her husband Mike's business, This Day Photography. The couple fell in love with the historic building, seeing potential as not only a place for their 14-year-old photography studio, but also a location for a new venture. Feltner said for the past several years, she's enjoyed making small batches of donuts for her friends. After doing some number crunching, the pair decided to open their own bakery. Originally, the plan was to only make donuts, but the community had an interest in a full bakery opening in town. The name is a nod to the downtown's history. "We got to thinking how much these buildings in downtown Nevada are brick. And Nevada was a brick hub for central Iowa. There were 3 brick factories around the edges of Nevada in the early 1900s, Feltner said. Renovations to the space included building a kitchen, exposing the brick walls, redoing floors, and fixing up an old cabinet found in the basement, putting a pastry cabinet on top of it in the bakery. All items are baked fresh daily, with day-old donuts given away. On average," Feltner said, "Bricktown sells 1,000 donuts on weekdays and about 2,000 on Saturdays. Classics are always available, including Long John's, Bismarck's, glazed donuts, cake donuts, fritters, bear claws, and pine cones, which are a cinnamon pastry. Seasonal cake donuts are also offered. Pastries include turnovers, pinwheels, cupcakes, tiny pies, and stacked brownies. Happy accidents are some of the most popular items sold." "I love Bob Ross," Feltner said. "Our happy accidents are a cake donut that got a little too balled up. We smash it down and put some yummy filling on top, like apple pie or cherry filling or German chocolate filling. Hard scoop ice cream, drip coffee, hot cider, and cocoa are also at the ready. We're a nice mix of an old school donut shop with a twist on the new, she said. Feltner said she is planning a special 12 days of Christmas event where a different seasonal donut will be offered in the days leading up to Christmas. She said pies and strudels are expected to be in demand this holiday season. The bakery will close at 2 p.m. on Christmas Eve. The bakery is open 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. It can be reached at 641-336-6886 and at office@bricktown-bakery.com. You can order online at www.bricktown-bakery.com. And that brings us to our appointment with Dear Abby. The headline of her column today says, Letters from Elderly Dad are only thinly veiled criticisms. There is the one letter today, and it starts out like this. Dear Abby, I could use some advice on the best response to my 89-year-old father's letters. He cleverly inserts insults into them without writing anything for which he could be criticized. For example, he has always talked about how he hates fat people. I am very overweight. My father sends me letters talking about how fit and trim another relative is who had just visited. That's all he says about them, and it's all he writes to me about. I can certainly read between the lines. This isn't a one-time thing, just one example. I know my father will never change. He was abusive to me, my siblings, and my mother. I see these letters as another way for him to continue his abuse, so I ignore them. Not engaging is my way of taking the high road. Extended family and friends bug me to talk with him about it, but I have never had a good experience with talking to my father. I would have hoped that being closer to death would cause him to reconsider his interactions with his children, but he just isn't able to do so. Could you recommend a response other than silence? Signed, Reading Into It in Illinois. Abby replies, Dear Reading Into It, as a matter of fact, I can. Write him back and say something like this. Dear Dad, you may have been wondering why I don't respond to your letters. They contain nothing more than comparisons to other relatives who are skinnier and more fit than I am, and frankly, I find them painful to read. I am not writing this as a criticism of you, but only so you will understand my silence. Sincerely, your daughter Judy. You do not have to talk to him. This should get your message across. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Des Moines Register for Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, November 26, 2020. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. You can hear this show again at 6 p.m. and then again at 1 a.m. Recordings are available on our website, iowaradioreading.org. All material heard on IRIS is intended for the use of Iowans who are print disabled. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call at 515-243-6833. You can also call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa, 1-877-404-4747. Once again, we want you to know that our program schedule has changed so that we can get as much local information to as many listeners as possible. The Fort Dodge Messenger will be read at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday. The Mason City Globe Gazette will be read at 8 a.m. Monday through Friday. Your Des Moines Register will continue to be read from 9 a.m. to noon. The Cedar Rapids Gazette will be read at noon 7 days a week. The Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier will be read at 1 p.m. 7 days a week. The Dubuque Telegraph Herald will be read at 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil will be read at 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Sioux City Journal will be read at 4 p.m. 7 days a week. The Ames Tribune will be read at 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. And finally, the Midweek Shopping Cart is read each Wednesday at 9 p.m. We will stay with this schedule until further notice. I'm your reader, Dale Finnegan. It's been a pleasure to read for you today on Thanksgiving. Stay tuned now for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. And thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.
In Africa, 5-year-old Charu has no choice. She and millions like her must walk miles every day for dirty water. But together, we can end their walk by providing clean water close by. Instead of spending hours walking to get water that makes them sick, girls can be in a classroom that expands their minds, and moms will gain back time to care for their families. Sons and daughters can grow up strong, finally free of sicknesses caused by dirty water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and the chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.